The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420. The Answer.
It is indeed exactly that. Always Right Radio on a certain kind of day. What kind of a day do we like to call this? I do believe it is a free-for-all Friday on AM 1420, The Answer. 8 minutes after 9 o'clock, it is the 12th morning of the 4th month, year of our Lord, 2024. Mr. Scream kind of took the day off there. He was supposed to shout for me. Can you do something, sir? There you go. Earn your paycheck. How about that? It's not $20 an hour like you get for dunking fries into hot grease in California now, but we do what we can. All right. Appreciate you joining us. Really, really, really good day yesterday. Thank you again to John Stover. I want to put that to bed because I'm still very, very humbled by it, but I got a ton of messages yesterday on the air, or excuse me, on social media. And privately on my cell phone from everybody who heard our conversation. But thank you to John Stover and the board at the Ohio Value Voters Organization for the Patrick Henry Liberty Award. It was a glorious thing. We had a great conversation, a couple of other great conversations, I should say, too, yesterday. And we're going to have one today, too. Coming up this morning in the third hour, so I won't pay a ton of attention to it now. But coming up in the third hour, we are going to talk to Danny Katz. And I'm going to kind of... I apologize. I'm just reading, looking at something else I'll be sharing with you shortly. As I was pulling up my notes on our guest, I noted a message that I received from Johnny Hiles, one of our producers. And Johnny Hiles has something very special and another treat that he's going to have for us today. I'll share the rest of that stuff coming with you a little bit later on, but we have a very, very big window of time for you, an open window of time for you to call today on Free for All Friday. We just have the one guest. There is a chance we have another a rabbi, and I won't even tell you about that until, you know, the situation reveals itself as to see whether or not we're going to hear from him. He's on California time. Not exactly sure if that's going to work out, but we will be talking with one person today, perhaps two, and certainly plenty of opportunities for you at 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. That's why we do call it a free-for-all Friday, and sometimes we actually like to live up to that. All right, before we get into the news of the day, and there is a lot of it, at the top 9 at 9, what do you say we pledge allegiance? I got another flag picture yesterday and a private message on Facebook, so I added it to the gallery, if you will. So if you got a flag in your home or in your car or someplace that you pledge to when we do this every morning, please send it to me, and I'll put it up there, and I'll try to put your name on it, too, so that we can give credit to everybody who is truly a patriot. So go ahead and stand and face whatever flag you have and join us in this pledge. If you are a radical leftist who doesn't believe in the glory of this country and who believes in selling out its people, its citizens, and its sovereignty, then don't stand and pledge allegiance to it like some virtue signaler. Just own who you are and take a knee like a good little Marxist. For the rest of us,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, like I said, there's a lot of news to get to today, so without further ado...
It's 9 o'clock. Do you know where your headlines are? We do. It's time for the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio.
All right, let's get it started.
Number 1.
The White House is at it again. Let's go, Brandon, announcing... another round of student loan debt forgiveness this morning, canceling around $7.4 billion, with a B, in debt as part of the most recent attempt at widespread student loan forgiveness ahead of the election, otherwise known as vote purchasing. The administration announced the handouts targeted at an estimated 277,000 borrowers across the country, with a national debt topping $34.5 trillion. We're not going to try to collect the $7.4 billion from these borrowers. These 277,000 borrowers are enrolled in my administration's SAVE plan, Biden released in a statement today, or were approved for relief because of fixes we made to the income-driven repayment plans and public service loan forgiveness. From day one of my administration, this freaking grifter stated, I promise to fight to ensure higher education is a ticket to the middle class, not a barrier to opportunity. Hey, you freaking piece of Skeletor crap. Guess what? None of that was in the loan papers they signed. They signed papers that said, we will pay it back. Period. Point blank. So why is this continuing? Here's why. The latest poll is out. March 25th to the 28th. Poll from, I'm trying to make sure, this is a Fox News poll of over 1,100 voters. Voters under the age of 30, who do you support for president? 40% Biden. 58% of the young voters under 30, the ones who just graduated with their student loan debt, 58% of them are for Trump. Now you know why Biden is willing to literally buy every single one of the votes that he can get from them. There you have it.
Number 2.
City University of New York professor and professional race hustler Mark Lamont Hill weighed in yesterday on the death of O.J. Simpson. Hill says, yeah, O.J. was guilty, but his acquittal was necessary to address racism in the legal system. Here's his direct tweet. O.J. Simpson was an abusive liar who abandoned his community long before he killed two people in cold blood. His acquittal for murder was the correct and necessary result of a racist criminal legal system. But he's still a monster, not a martyr. End quote. That's right, a prominent racial arsonist admits that O.J. Simpson killed two people, but that he's glad he was acquitted because the system is racist. And if that wasn't enough, here's CNN discussing how happy that black racists were to see a black man get away with double murder because Rodney King and stuff.
And it's also just worth noting how much was impacted by this trial, Jake. So many things happened. We saw policing changing here in the city. And it's also worth noting, because of that unrest, that racial unrest in the 90s, that is why so many people who may not have been invested in O.J. Simpson, we're just happy to see that someone who was rich and famous and black could get away with what other people did in the system as well, too.
I'm going to let that sit for a moment just so you can soak it in. Because of the racial unrest in the 90s, i.e. Rodney King, there were a lot of people who were really happy that somebody who was black could get away with killing people. There's no amount of, I'm struggling for words there about what that must feel like for the Goldman family and for Nicole Brown's family. But That's America. That was America in 1995, and it is America today.
Number three.
One more note on the death and instant descent into hell of double murderer O.J. Simpson. Here's a clip of one of the O.J. jurors who set him free, casually admitting that 90% of her jury knew that O.J. had killed Nicole and Ron. But they set him free anyway for revenge.
Do you think that they're members of the jury that voted to acquit O.J. because of Rodney King?
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
How many of you think felt that way?
Oh, probably 90% of them.
90%? Did you feel that way?
Yes.
That was payback.
Uh-huh.
You think that's right?
In case you couldn't hear it, he said, for payback, for Rodney King. And she said, uh-huh. Then when he said, do you think that was right? She shrugged her shoulders and slapped her thighs and just stared straight ahead at him. That was America in 1995. And sadly, that is America today.
Number four.
Anti-Second Amendment activist David Hogg is usually insulated from being exposed by people who actually know what they're talking about because he does 99% of his activism behind a keyboard. But he recently ventured out into real life and took questions on his gun control views from students and was quickly reminded why he needs to stay at home in the basement with the keyboard. He was destroyed by a Chinese immigrant who gave him a little history lesson that he should never forget.
Hi, my name is Lady Tang Williams. Welcome to my live free or die state. Actually, I am a Chinese immigrant who survived communism. And under Mao, 40 million people were starving to death after he sold the communism to them. And 20 million people died, murdered during his Cultural Revolution. So my question to you, David, is that can you guarantee me a gun owner tonight? Our government in the U.S., in D.C., will never, never become a tyrannical government. Can you guarantee that to me?
There's no way I can ever guarantee that any government will not be tyrannical.
Well, then the debate on gun control is over because I will never give up my guns. Never, never. And you should go to China to see how gun control works for dictatorship.
What an absolute home run by Lily Tang Williams, a Chinese immigrant, who told David Hogg things that little Gen Z leftists don't know about and don't want to hear. That yes, nations that disarm their citizens are the ones that can indeed bring tyranny down upon them. And that's why she will never, ever give up her guns. She knows what Chinese history is all about from the Cultural Revolution there. Outstanding job. Go back to your basement, little hog.
Number five.
Could the next vice president of the United States come from Ohio? Senator J.D. Vance, the freshman senator, revealed yesterday, his thoughts behind the speculation that he's on the short list for President Trump. He went on with Laura Ingraham to discuss the report that the senator has made it onto Trump's short list for his running mate. Here's what J.D. had to say.
Well, Laura, I've actually never spoken to the president about VP speculation. My simple answer is I want to help him however I can. If he asked me, of course, I would think seriously about it. It would be a great honor. I also am happy to support the agenda in the United States Senate. And regardless, Laura, if you remember, my job is to serve the people of Ohio. Whether it's supporting Trump's agenda in the Senate or serving in some other role, we have got to bring good manufacturing jobs, good prosperity to the people of Ohio in the American heartland. For 40 years, we had a bipartisan consensus to ship jobs overseas to bring unchecked migration. Trump stopped that. And the real question for the Republican Party is whether we follow that lead and double down on that winning agenda,
wow,
or do we try to go back to the old ways? And unfortunately, Laura, as you know as well as I do, there is a critical component of the old guard of the Republican Party that wants to go back to the old ways. More immigration, more war, less good wages for American workers. Thank God Trump is there to push back against it.
I love Senator Vance, and I think he would be a phenomenal pick. I would hate to lose him in the Senate, though. It reminds me of when Trump plucked Jeff Sessions out of Alabama to be Attorney General, and it was a terrible decision for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is it cost us a very important seat in the very close majority, or the close battle for the majority in the Senate. So I would hate to lose J.D. Vance in the Senate, but he would be a phenomenal choice, I believe.
Number six.
Hamas squad representative Sharia Tlaib went off on a Fox reporter who confronted her about the Death to America chants we played for you that sounded in her Michigan district last week. Tlaib is home, or her district is home to Dearborn, the largest population of Muslims per capita in the United States. She has not said a word of condemnation since the chant on the Al-Quds Day rally on April 5th of Death to Israel, Death to America on American soil. So Hillary Vaughn, Fox News reporter, approached her and asked her if she would condemn said Death to America chants, and it went like this.
Congresswoman Tlaib.
Fox News. I don't talk to Fox News.
At a rally in your district, people were chanting Death to America. Do you condemn?
I do not talk to Fox News.
But do you condemn chants of Death to America?
I don't talk to people that use racist tropes.
Why can't you just say whether or not you condemn people chanting Death to America? Why are you afraid to talk to Fox?
Fox News is not listen, using racist tropes towards my community is what Fox News is about, and I don't talk to Fox News.
It's Death to America.
She spent more time talking to that Fox News reporter by saying that she's not going to talk to Fox News than it would have taken her to say, of course I condemn Death to America chants. Now get away from me. All she had to do was answer the question, do you condemn it? Why didn't she condemn it? Why did she hide behind the I don't talk to Fox News? Because she does not condemn it. She agrees with it. She is Palestine first, just like Jihad Omar is Somalia first. That is literally what their agenda is. One, their own ancestral homelands as they see them. That is number one. And number two is whatever they can do for their people in the United States. Death to America is not something that they oppose. That's the whole reason that went the way that it did.
Number seven.
How about this? Members of a regional women's country line dance team were kicked out of a Seattle dance competition at a convention after the organizers claimed that their American flag themed shirts made some of the attendees feel triggered and unsafe. The team was wearing matching shirts themed around the American flag, but for some of the crowd, it was a step too far, and it ended up effectively canceling their performance. At first, we were told we would just be booed and yelled at, and likely many of them would walk out, the team said. This did not deter us, but then we were given an ultimatum. Remove the flag tops and perform in either street clothes, or they'll supply us with T-shirts, or don't perform at all, which effectively was asking us to leave. Did I mention that Seattle is in the United States of America? They don't want to be, but they are. And American flag-themed shirts are not welcome in communist Seattle. That's just the reality.
Number eight.
The mother of a dead thug in Chicago named Dexter Reed is making headlines after a body cam of her dead thug son was released, showing him refusing to roll down his window when ordered to do so during a traffic stop, and then showing him shooting cops. He struck one of them. Multiple officers returned fire. Let me emphasize those words. Returned fire, killing the criminal. And mom is now on video screaming, "They took my son away from me!" After informing mom that police did not take her son away from her, but that her thug son tried to take police officers' lives away from them and their families, it might be instructive to inform her and others that it's a good idea maybe to raise your baby boys to not fire guns at police officers. Sorry, Dexter Reed, mommy. Failed cop killer Dexter Reed, mommy. But not sorry. And finally,
number nine.
A 38-year-old bearded man was arrested in North Carolina after indecently exposing himself in a Planet Fitness locker room. A man claiming to be a woman stripped completely naked inside the women's locker room, Christopher Allen Miller did, taking advantage of Planet Fitness's policy that allows members to use the locker rooms, bathrooms, and showers based on their gender identity. He entered the women's locker room at the gym's Gastonia, North Carolina location, took off all of his clothes, then asked a woman to rub some lotion on him. and shower at the same time with him before one woman had enough and called 911, reporting, "It's a man, but he says he identifies as a woman and he won't leave the restroom. But he's just walking around showing us his blank and he won't leave." That's what the woman told the dispatcher. Miller was booked in the local county jail, identified as a male in his online inmate entry, by the way. The moral of this story, buy a treadmill, jog in the park, do anything, but stay the hell away from Planet Fitness.
This has been the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio. AM 1420. The answer.
All right, there you have it. Top 9 at 9 takes us to the bottom of the hour. On the other side, let's do open lines, free for all, Friday. What do you want to talk about? Anything you just heard in the Top 9 at 9? Anything that has happened all week? Anything that hasn't happened or we haven't talked about all week? You make the call. We are guest-free until 11:10 for sure, and possibly something in the 10 o'clock hour. But the lines are open right now. 216-901-0945. Join us if you'd like on Always Right Radio.
Answer.
Okay, it is 9:35 on this free-for-all Friday. Thank you very much for being with us. 216-901-0945 is the number to join us, 888-281-1110. I just saw something, and we made a quick reach out to Jonathan Broadbent because of something I saw during our break just now. I won't read the full language in this, but it starts with, "Holy F." It wasn't Jonathan who wrote that. This is Tim Pool, conservative podcaster. Holy blank, read this. They stole 2024 back in 2021. And there's a link there to a whitehouse.gov briefing announcement of an executive order made by Joe Biden. Well, our friend Jonathan Broadbent retweeted this. That's what brought it to my attention. And he tagged me in the tweet that said, "Call your representatives now or we will have no elections in 2024. We're 6.5 months away from the election of 2024. Now, I don't have time to read through this 2,500-word executive order from Joe Biden, so I made a quick call to Jonathan, or we made a quick call to Jonathan to see if he can tell us what in the heck he's panicking about here and what Tim Pool is panicking about in this message. So Jonathan Broadbent is on with us. Jonathan, of course, is the founder and the president of Unwoke Investing. Jonathan, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Bob.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, I hear you just fine. Sorry to reach out on such short notice, but during my commercial break there at the bottom, I saw your tweet, which you tagged myself and Khalid Damar in, and I clicked the link, and it's too long to read, but when you say, I trust your judgment, and when you say, call your representatives now or we have no elections in 6.5 months in 2024, I have to ask you to explain it to us. What are we looking at here?
Yeah, well, the first thing to know is I'm part of the leadership team of AssembleX Ohio, and last night we had a space. So how do I want to put this? I don't claim to be an expert on elections and voter rolls and those kinds of things, but I do have connections to and ties with people who are. So I've sort of inadvertently fallen into this group of people who are tracking these issues, and I'm monitoring their comments. So last night on AssembleX Ohio, we had a space. We had Representative Jennifer Gross from Southern Ohio. She's 45th district. We had a woman who has been tracking Ohio elections for some years now. And it was a spectacular space. It's recorded, so anybody that wants to listen to that, that's a great starting point. Go to Twitter and look for AssembleX Ohio. I'm part of the leadership team of that. Khalid Damar is also. So we had this great conversation, and then lo and behold, this morning, this thing popped up on my radar, and it is frightening. So here's what it looks like in a nutshell. In 2021, the nefarious bad actors who were really they're infiltrating and corrupting our whole election system. I think we can acknowledge that by now. And in recent polls, I think that we're at something like 70% of the United States has some degree of mistrust with our election systems. Let's just be honest about that. I mean, prior to 2019, virtually everybody under the sun was pointing to the corruption and just the overall badness of how we run our elections. But here's what it looks like. In 2021, there was an executive order that was signed by Joe Biden, and the key takeaway is that excerpt that's in the Tim Pool tweet, and it says simply this. It's one sentence. Mm-hmm. Whether consistent with applicable law, any identity documents issued by the agency to members of the public can be issued in a form that satisfies state voter identification laws. So what that tells us is under the auspices, and the left have been doing this for over a decade now, they're trying to paint Black America as somehow oppressed in the voter registration process. That somehow, and it's hilarious, a lot of Black conservatives are like, they just keep balking at the whole thing. Like, why do you keep saying that social Democrats, communists, why do you keep asserting that Black America can't go through the simple steps of registering to vote? Well, here's a clear sort of, hopefully I can connect the dots in a meaningful way. The left have been painting that picture for a long time in order to be able to use the registration process as somehow cumbersome or awkward. Mm-hmm. And what they've done in 2021 is said, really effectively, any form of state ID, any form anybody can get their hands on, can be used to register to vote. Well, now what we're seeing with all these illegal immigrants, especially in places like New York, is the ability to get a driver's license. So the comments or the position that the left have taken is that registering to vote is so awkward and cumbersome and difficult that we needed to make it easier in 2021. Therefore, any form of ID, you just take that into a voter registration or your local board of elections, and poof, you're a registered voter. Now let's apply that to what we're seeing in the illegal immigrant community. The illegal immigrants are being handed these state-issued IDs. Now, sorry, this gets a little bit into the weeds, and hopefully this all makes sense. I've been following this. Again, I want to be clear that I am personally not the resident expert on this, but I do know a lot of people who are. The registration process, in order to be able to get an absentee ballot, was so stripped down and dumbed down that now virtually anybody with the last four digits of a Social Security number can collect an absentee ballot. Now, put all those pieces together. We have 15 million illegal immigrants in the United States just since Biden took office alone. Those 15 million people, an overwhelming majority of whom now have the last four digits of a Social Security number, we believe, based on new enrollment data, and now apply the ease with which they can get a state-issued ID and this executive order from 2021. It's frightening. It means, put simply, that we have an estimated 15 million people that by the stroke of a pen that happened three years ago, we have an estimated 15 million new quote-unquote votes flooding our election systems.
Okay. Jonathan, thank you. Good explanation. A lot of information there. I don't think you went too far into the weeds. This might be a little bit into the weeds, what I'm about to ask you. I'm looking at every word in the section there that Tim posted. Again, it's a 2,500-word executive order by Biden that was issued on March 7th, 2021, so literally 2 months after he took office. Immediately, they set in motion the plan to make it easier and legal for illegal aliens to vote by this order being given on March 7, 2021. And it was within the first 100 days that Biden repealed 94 different orders, or issued 94 different orders repealing and revoking Trump policies that secured the border. So, I mean, let's put that timeline together. We're going to roll back everything. We're going to announce anybody who wants to come in pretty much can come in. There's no more catch. There's no more remain in Mexico. We will do catch and release. If you come here and you are seeking asylum, we'll set you free until your asylum hearing, and you can come into the United States, blah, blah, blah. They did that at the same time that he was issuing this executive order on promoting access to voting, which is what it's called. And of these 2,500 words, Jonathan, we've got it down to about 20 words here, and one of them is important, or maybe it's important. This is what I want to ask you. It says, whether consistent with applicable law, any identity documents issued by the agency to members of the public can be issued in a form that satisfies state voter identification laws. What agency? That one word there is interesting to me. What agency? Any agency? Does that mean any identification from any agency anywhere? Does that mean a college ID? Does that mean a high school ID if you're 18? What agency are we talking about that they will allow identity documents from them to satisfy voter registration?
It's my understanding, Bob, and believe me, I'm only about one step maybe ahead of you in interpreting this. Mm-hmm. It's my understanding that they're referring to any federal agency. So if a federal agency issues any form of ID, what this tells us is that that supersedes applicable state law. Now, I personally don't believe that that's legitimate, because the way that our elections laws are written, state trumps federal. So the state actually supersedes and is more important and valued in the sort of hierarchy of legitimacy. States and state legislatures determine their own state laws. However, the nuance to that is when it comes to federal elections, the federal law can, and I'm putting this in lay terms because I'm not a lawyer, just I'm a concerned enough citizen that I pay a lot of attention to the wording. It's my understanding in general that when it comes to federal elections, like the election of a president, that the federal government can step in and assert laws. So now we have an upcoming federal election, probably arguably one of the most important in U.S. history, Trump versus Biden. And we have the federal government working to assert itself as superior to state law. So that's my interpretation of this. It's the federal government saying, if we issue any form of ID, that form of ID can be used to get a ballot and vote. And by nature of signing this executive order, we are superseding the rights of state law.
Okay. And I appreciate that explanation. I did a quick search of the document, you know, just a control F search for the word agency and agencies, and no agencies are directly named that would be acceptable for identifying documents. It says agencies all throughout the document, but no specific agency is listed. Any identity documents issued by the agency to members of the public can be issued in a form that satisfies state voter identification laws. So, Jonathan, it's one thing to have that state identification for voter registration, which is what I think I heard you say in your wonderful explanation there. But that's different than when it comes time to vote, when it comes time to get to the polls and get your ballot. That is where people have to be able to show their identification. Is that addressed in this order? Not just registering, but at the time of voting, like we have to do here in Ohio. I cast my vote in the primary last month, like I always do. Well, not always, but recently I've been doing early voting and going to the Board of Elections, and I have to show my legitimate state identification in order to be able to get my ballot. Is that going to be changed by this?
Well, we need to get into the weeds a little bit more again relative to that, because that's nuanced. So your experience is very different than a lot of people who vote by absentee ballot. The people that vote by mail or ballot that they receive in the mail and put in one of those drop boxes, they don't actually have to show ID. Their ballot has to be connected to something representing a form of identification. But let's look and remember that this pertains to all 50 states and territories that vote, not just Ohio. And we can see the clear intentions of the far left in things like the state legislature in Pennsylvania. So Pennsylvania, right next door, for instance, has been making significant moves to register voters at the time that they apply for a driver's license. And New York is doing very much the same thing. There's a fight. There are citizens in those states who are pushing back and saying that they don't think that that's legitimate, that people need to show and prove citizenship in order to make that leap from stepping into the Bureau of Motor Vehicles and requesting a driver's license to poof, suddenly they're a registered voter.
That's right.
But the left clearly want to make that as easy as possible. And I'm sorry, but we need to keep calling out the mechanism, sort of that lever that the left is pulling, and it's race baiting. It's based on this presumption that the left keeps trying to assert on society that black people in America are oppressed and can't get voter registration. That's the whole premise of this thing. Read it. It talks about how difficult and how oppressive the whole voter registration and the process of voting in the United States has historically been. And it builds on this whole premise that the systemic racism baked into the mix in our election systems, and uses that sort of emotional lever to get people to kowtow to this nonsense and say, well, yes, it must be difficult because they're saying it is, and therefore anybody with any form of the last four digits of Social Security number or any form of ID whatsoever should be handed a ballot. And there's another piece that I don't want to lose sight of here. And I'm going to start with the golden rule of elections. Golden rule of elections is vote in private, count in public. We've lost that years ago. The other piece of it is there's a trade-off. There's an inherent sort of a trade-off between the ease with which we are able to vote. And nowhere in any document does it say that it needs to be easy. The other side of that is the more, and of course we don't want to make elections difficult for anybody. And I argue we actually haven't. For somebody to simply their local county board of elections or the Bureau of Motor Vehicles or something and identify themselves clearly, that is not a laborsome process. The left are trying to paint it that way, that somehow people are ostracized and kicked out of the system by simply having to go and show up and show legitimate form of ID. And I call nonsense. I call BS on that. And it's happened. There are man on the street videos all over YouTube of people walking around. And again, the left are using Black America as an excuse for this nonsense. But there are people, there are film crews that have gone around in predominantly black neighborhoods and asked, do you have a form of ID? And it's black, universal. Every black person in America who has a microphone put in front of them says, oh, that's ridiculous. Of course I can. When I go to buy alcohol or buy cigarettes or, you know, when I go to change the title on my car, I have to show a form of ID. So the basic premise of it is nonsense to begin with, but keep asserting it. And based on that, the left has said we need to make it easy as possible. And again, sort of clarify my position on this and the trying to make, if we make it overly easy, then we have given up effectively on the legitimacy of the election. If we suddenly just mail out hundreds of millions, like we did in 2020. We saw in Pennsylvania, there were more millions of ballots that returned than were mailed out. And that is very, it's in the direction of simple and not enough checks and balances for legitimacy. And now we're at a point of crisis in America where we don't trust our elections. Recent polls, including Democrats, Republicans, and Independents in, I believe it was an ABC poll in Michigan, reflected a 70%, I'm paraphrasing, don't quote on the numbers, roughly 70% of respondents said that they have some degree of mistrust in our mm-hmm. election systems. So we've clearly gone too far in the direction of just sort of peppering the countryside with ballots and accepting anything back without verification.
Well, there's a message here in one of the comments under the tweet that prompted this discussion, Jonathan, that says, why do you think they handed out millions of Social Security numbers to Venezuelans last fall? They're all getting licenses, and Motor Voter is so convenient. Facebook has been actively targeting illegals to register to vote. I've been screaming about it for months, and that is very true. The part about the Venezuelans and the phone number and the Social Security numbers and the fact that they can indeed register when they get their driver's licenses, which they are being told they're allowed to have, is evidence enough of this. So to the point here that you made in your tweet, which prompted my very quick call to you, and thank you, by the way, for the prompt response and the willingness to come on about this, as you pointed out, call your representatives now. Literally tell them about this executive order and see what can be done. Obviously, legislation supersedes executive order at the federal level, so they need to get a law passed now. I know it's going to be very, very hard, given the fact that we're 6.5 months away from an election and given the fact that the Democrats control the Senate. But nonetheless, we have to do something to expose this nationally and let everybody know about the attempt to steal our elections by allowing millions upon millions of illegals to have access to the ballots. Jonathan, thank you. Keep up the great work. You are doing a phenomenal job in so many different areas, but we really appreciate your expertise on this. As you said, you're not an expert on this particular thing, and you're not a lawyer, but you certainly are following it closely enough, and it was a great explanation. We do appreciate it.
Terrific. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you, Jonathan. That's Jonathan Broadbent. I'm going to play this quick clip here on the way into the top of the hour break. Tucker Carlson said this back on, I think it was March 1st.
The numbers you need to understand. Yale University released a study last week by three researchers, all of them liberal, I believe, who concluded that the actual number of illegal aliens in this country is not 11 million, it's north of 22 million. 22 million. Mm. Fact one. Fact two. The Democratic Party is now, as a matter of policy, calling for the legalization of all illegals in this country. Citizenship, voting rights. 22 million new voters. Fact mm-hmm. three. The overwhelming majority of first-time immigrant voters vote Democrat. Fact four. The largest margin in American presidential history was 17 million votes, 1984 election between Mondale and Reagan.
And Reagan, yeah.
17 million. You would add to our voter rolls 22 million, at least, permanent electoral majority in perpetuity. That's what this is about. It's not about making the country better, serving our labor needs, helping the population. It's about putting Democrats in power forever. Truth of our immigration debate, period.
Period, indeed. We'll be right back.
.com.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420. The Answer. Is your host, Bob France.
All right, 7 minutes after 10 o'clock, and hour number two is underway. Good morning to you. It is a free-for-all Friday edition of Always Right Radio. 12th morning of the fourth month, year of our Lord, 2024. Really, really alarming stuff there coming from Jonathan Broadbent, and I concur with his analysis, and I second his suggestion that we've got to contact everybody in the federal government that we can. And by the way, why weren't they making noise about this for 3 years? Why is it that this is just becoming known to a lot of people, myself included? And we're talking about people who do news for a living, for our livings. We make a point of being on top of all of these things. Obviously, we can't hit everything unless you've got a massive staff of, you know, the size of the New York Times or something like that. But I didn't hear about this. Did you hear about this? Jonathan didn't hear about this. Tim Pool didn't hear about this. March 7, 2021, executive order on promoting access to voting. It's a 2,500-word pile of Joe Biden-esque crap that says that it's impossible to vote and to have your vote count and to get easy access to the polls if you're a minority in America. And so therefore, we are going to do this, 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 and this to make it easier for anybody to vote. Whether they're a citizen or not is not relevant to Biden. Whether they are who they say they are, which is why voter identification rules exist in various states, that's not relevant to Biden either. Because all of this, I just, again, putting the little pieces together and trying to match the puzzle on the front of the box, I see March 7th of 2021, which is inside the first 100 days of the Biden presidency. In that first 100 days, the Biden presidency rolled back 94 different executive orders protecting the border that President Trump had implemented. So 94 different orders to open the border, and then within that period of time, by the way, it's going to be virtually, it's going to be beyond easy. It's going to be a lock. It's going to be a guarantee that illegal immigrants coming into this country, because we have opened those the border, that they're going to be able to get identifications to go and vote, or we are going to not require any identifications at all because, quote, promoting access to voting. That's what it's all about. Tucker Carlson is right, by the way. That piece that I just played for you, it's a 57-second soundbite I played for you before the top of the hour. This is what Tucker said back on March 1st in an interview talking about the massive wave of illegal aliens. It's not just, it's about a lot of things. It is about taking the United States apart. There's no question about that. But specifically and more directly and more currently, if you will, because this is, you know, an election that's coming up in 6.5 months here, it is about giving control and maintaining control of the United States to the Democrats.
The numbers you need to understand. Yale University released a study last week by three researchers, all of them liberal, I believe, who concluded that the actual number of illegal aliens in this country is not 11 million, it's north of 22 million. 22 million.
It has to be, by the way. It has to be. I'll play the rest of that in a second. Because we've been hearing for years, 11 million illegals, 11 million illegals, even though we find out that they're coming across by the millions, particularly during the Biden administration, at least 10 million. You know, they talked about this 2 months ago, and they said it was 7.3 million that they can verify. Then that does not count the 2 million unknown known gotaways, and then the hundreds of thousands of unknown gotaways. Add all of this up, you're north of 10 million just in Biden's years alone. Add that to the 11 million that they were talking about before Biden became president. And, yeah, north of 22 million. Tucker's right.
Fact one. Fact two. The Democratic Party is now, as a matter of policy, calling for the legalization of all illegals in this country. Citizenship, voting rights. 22 million new voters. Fact three. The overwhelming majority of first-time immigrant voters vote Democrat. Fact four. The largest margin in American presidential history was 17 million votes, 1984 election between Mondale and Reagan.
And Reagan, yeah.
17 million. You would add to our voter rolls 22 million, at least, permanent electoral majority in perpetuity. That's what this is about. It's not about making the country better, serving our labor needs, helping the population. It's about putting Democrats in power forever.
Permanent electoral majority in perpetuity. Those words should be ringing in your ears. And he is exactly correct. And that's what this is all about. So the question is now what do we do? We heard about something really, you know, dangerous on the radio. We heard about something that's troubling about our elections. And, yeah, but it's lunchtime. Let's go. Are we going to forget about it? Are we going to make some calls? I promise you this will be one of the questions that I ask of Congressman Jordan on Monday. And if I can get any other members of Congress to join me, I'll ask them about it, too. This is extraordinarily dangerous. All right. Phone lines are open to 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110 on an Always Right Radio Free for All Friday. Lisa Woods is in Medina to kick it off. Lisa, good morning.
Hey, good morning. And congratulations on your Ohio Value Voters Award for the Patrick Henry Award. I think that's incredible. Congratulations.
Well, thank you for that. It was really unnecessary. Very appreciated. Very, very humbling. But you know what? We're all a team. I feel like anyway, we're all a team, and we're all just doing our part to help. To help what we can. And so the fact that it was recognized by that board is a very, very nice honor. But obviously, the work goes on.
We are a team, and we have a country to save.
Yes, we do.
And you have some of the busiest workers listening to this show. So, and I called because tomorrow, and this is, you know, just great that Jonathan was just on, tomorrow Jonathan Broadbent will be at McFan.
Oh, he didn't mention it. I'm sorry. Well, I caught him off guard. I caught him off guard. We called him on a literally a moment's notice there, so he wasn't prepared to do a promotion. But, yeah, tell us what Jonathan's doing.
Yes. And not just Jonathan. We also have Jeremiah Sawyer, who is the president of the Ohio School Board Constitutional Coalition, and also a new uprising rock star, Aiden Haggard from Medina Schools. He's a senior, and he is the president of the Medina Conservative Youth Union. And we'll be talking about schools and unwoke school boards and how to get them.
Well, that's great. Yeah, Jeremiah's terrific. Jonathan is terrific. The young man, I don't know, but if he is in the position that he's in, obviously that's a great thing, too. And I'll tell you what, it's, you know what, I have a small reason for optimism this morning. I saw this number earlier this morning on TV, and I brought it up in my top 9 at 9. I didn't realize, because, you know, I feel like we're surrendering so much of vote to, you know, the leftist indoctrination of our young kids, you know, because of the way colleges and high schools and middle schools have become, and these kids all become voting age, and, you know, you think they're going to be obvious progressive voters and Democrat voters. But I saw this number this morning. Voters under 30 and their preference for president, this is a recent poll, it's from March 23rd to the 25th, 1,100 person sample size, but all of them under the age of 30. Biden 40%, Trump 58%. That shocks me, but it gives me, you know, encouragement and optimism. And it, people like, you know, the young man that you just mentioned is going to be talking to McFan tomorrow, that there are, maybe there are a lot more young students in the Gen Z era or generation who are resisting the indoctrination, who are exposed to it and are pushing back against it. And maybe not verbally, maybe silently. Maybe they're looking at it knowing this is all garbage and this is all trash, and I don't have to be ashamed of my skin color. And no, I did not oppress anybody. And no, I am not a different sex or identity or identification or what have you. But maybe all of the left-wing indoctrination is not getting through to the kids the way that the left hopes that they are, because that number was really, really impressive, Lisa.
It's true, Bob. You know, kids are changing. You know, the pendulum swings, right? You know, every generation and the different things that are going on. And that's exactly why Aiden is, what he will be discussing is the silent majority in an educational system. He's going to address the strides that he has made and what lies ahead for the conservative youth movement. And it gives us a lot of hope to see a young fellow like himself. And he's also going to introduce someone that's going to follow behind him. This fellow's name is James, and he will be there as well, because Aiden is moving on to college, and this young freshman, James, is going to pick up the torch and continue after Aiden leaves. So this is really exciting.
Yeah, it really is. That's great to hear. So great to know that he's going to be there, as well as Jonathan and Jeremiah, tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock, right, at Thirsty Cowboy?
Yep, 9 o'clock at the Thirsty Cowboy.
All right, Lisa Woods, thank you as always.
Thank you, Bob.
Appreciate you. All right, 216-901-0945. By the way, that election story, or the voter identification story, and that March 7th executive order that we just kind of stumbled across a little bit here, it's not the only story that I stumbled across this morning that I wanted you to hear. That, you know, it's a follow-up kind of a thing that, again, it's going to have you shaking your head, much in the same way that one did. If O.J. Simpson was allowed to be on the O.J. Simpson jury, how do you think he would have voted when it came to the decision of guilt or innocence? The reason I ask such an absurd question, and I'll get back to O.J. in a minute or two, but asking O.J. to be able to serve on his own jury is equivalent to this story. Headline, NBC News. There is no evidence that COVID vaccines cause, I'm sorry, it's not a headline, it's the tweet. There is no evidence that COVID vaccines cause fatal cardiac arrest or other deadly heart problems in teens and young adults, a CDC report finds. The new analysis debunks widespread misinformation about the mRNA vaccines. The operative word in that headline, in that tweet, and here's the actual headline: COVID vaccines not linked to fatal heart problems in young people, CDC finds. The operative word there would be the initials CDC. So the government hired the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, to investigate whether or not the CDC killed people with their RNA shots. That would be like OJ serving on his own jury. There is no evidence that the mRNA COVID vaccines cause fatal cardiac arrest or other deadly heart problems in teens and young adults, a Centers for Disease Control and Prevention report published Thursday shows. Ever since the vaccines, which, again, they keep using these words as if they mean anything. There is no such thing as an mRNA vaccine. Vaccines, by their definition, prevent the infection. They inoculate one to stop them from becoming infected with the virus that it is intended to stop. That's what a vaccine is. These are shots. These are experimental toxins. So stop with the vaccine crap. Number one. Number two, ever since the vaccines from the Pfizer and Moderna were authorized in late 2020, anti-vaccination groups in the U.S. have blamed the shots for fatal heart problems in young athletes. Let me stop there and say no, not anti-vaccination groups. Doctors, cardiologists, some of the most highly respected and revered physicians, as well as epidemiologists, They are the ones who have studied and examined the bodies and have examined the medical reports and the coroner's reports. They're the ones who have found the blood clots. They are the ones who are saying, holy goodness, there used to be four of these a year. Suddenly there were 2,500 of them in a year. And I'm making those numbers up because I don't have them in front of me. But this is, I've interviewed enough of the doctors, from Dr. Peter McCullough to Dr. Robert Malone. I mean, we've gone through this with medical experts who have said, absolutely, this is what the mRNA vaccines do, or shots do. This is what the spike proteins do. This is how they compromise the heart, basically. But it compromises the ability for the heart to function as normal. It presents multiple cardiac system, I guess is maybe what I was trying to say. Multiple cardiac conditions that have never, ever been observed before on the scale that they are right now in young people, particularly young people who are athletic and active. All of these things happened, and all of these respected doctors said, yeah, this is not normal and this is the reason why it's happening. And what did they do to those doctors? The same thing they did to the respected climatologists who said, whoa, no. The carbon level isn't causing this. This is what's happening here. This is, you know, the intensity of storms and the amount of drought or wildfires or all of these other things have nothing to do with climate. This is a scam. This is a great big giant money grab to try to enslave the world population and to take as much wealth of them away from them as possible so we can say we're trying to save the planet. All of this stuff. Well, these doctors who were so revered and so respected and so honored for so long were suddenly cast aside. Nope, they don't know what they're talking about. These are quacks. Those climatologists over there are not part of the narrative, so therefore they're quacks. These cardiologists here, these doctors, these internists, these people are quacks. They don't know what they're talking about. That's how this goes. The CDC got to do the study to find out whether the CDC made a mistake. The CDC got to do the study to find out whether the CDC was responsible for killing people. What's next? Do Pfizer executives get to decide whether or not Pfizer is responsible for Lord knows how many deaths and illnesses, severe, serious injuries, vaccine injuries caused by their untested, unproven, very dangerous jabs? Does Pfizer get to make that call too? How about the FDA? They're the ones who gave emergency use authorization to all of these things. Does the FDA get a say in this too? If you let the people who caused the problem investigate to see what the problem was, You think they're going to hold themselves responsible, or do you think they're going to give themselves a pass? The findings in the new report come from the analysis of nearly 1,300 death certificates of Oregon residents aged 16 to 30 who died from any heart condition or unknown reasons between June 1st, 2021 and December 31st, 2022. During this time, nearly 1 million teens and young adults had gotten a COVID vaccine, blah, blah, blah. It just goes into more of the same nonsense. I'm not going to bore you with the specific details of this, but just know that the CDC was asked to clear the CDC and the FDA and their business partners, the ones who helped them collect billions of dollars, not per year, but per quarter during 2021, during 2022, and even into the first part of 2023 when they were mandating shots, when Joe Biden was mandating shots into the arm of every American in the military, every American who works for a federal agency, every American who works for a company that does business with a federal agency, everybody that they could possibly jam those toxins into. That's exactly what they did. And now it's CYA time, because now the truth is coming out. And I've talked to McCullough, and I've talked to Malone, and I've talked to a number of these experts who have talked about literally more people died from the shots than died from the virus, because the virus numbers can't be trusted at all. But here we are. They're dropping this story on us on a Friday morning as it heads into the weekend news cycle, hoping it'll be kind of, I mean, it's reprehensible. It's disgusting that we continue to have to discuss these things in the way that we are. But you know what? I'm tired of pulling punches. I'm not going to give them the benefit of any doubt, number one. Number two, I'm not going to let it go. I'm not going to just say, well, that's in the past now. What do you think they're doing? Yesterday, what did we talk about yesterday? The avian flu, the bird flu. I talked about this with, who did we have yesterday? We were talking about, Thomas Massey. The avian flu, the bird flu that they say is here. And it's not only is it an avian infection, it's now been linked to cattle and, of course, human beings who consume that red meat. And, of course, ranchers who are around the cattle and so forth, they're all becoming infected. They're going to infect other people, and away we go. And on. What did Jonathan just talk about? What did Jonathan just talk about? Drop boxes and mail-in voting. They're going to do that, too. Everything that we have seen in this play, we have seen before. This is the sequel. They are going to scare the bejesus out of every American with this new virus. They're going to probably have new vaccines lined up and ready to go. They're going to say you can't gather in large crowds, so therefore voting is going to be by mail or by drop boxes where you don't have to encounter other people. All of this is playing out again. It was just 3.5 years ago. If you're not watching this and you're not paying attention to this, honestly, open your eyes. It is it's extraordinary. All right, I've got so much more that I want to talk about. News from the top 9 at 9 that I want to get into. I do have a guest coming up at 11:10, and we're going to talk about anti-Semitism, by the way, at 11:10. We're going to talk to a language expert by the name of Danny Katz, who says every Democrat labeling Trump an anti-Semite because he questioned how Jewish Americans can support the Democratic Party, these are the ones who are the true anti-Semites, and they are guilty of hate speech for this. We'll talk about that with Danny Katz. That'll be at 11:10. But between now and then, we've got more news, and we've got more opportunity for conversation at 216-901-0945.
The Answer.
All right. It is 10:35. Thanks for being with us on AM 1420, The Answer. Free for All Friday. You can jump on board when you're ready at 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. Before I go to any phone calls, though, yesterday we told you about woke Scrabble, right? So I don't think we called it woke Scrabble, but is that an easier way of saying the new Scrabble game?
That's definitely woke Scrabble.
Yeah. Woke Scrabble. Gen Z woke Scrabble is exactly what it is. If you didn't hear the story yet, Scrabble, the iconic game that has not changed one bit in 75 years of its existence, is now changing. Well, at least offering a change. On the flip side of the Scrabble board is a new board. It's the Scrabble Together board. The Scrabble Together part of the game comes with helper cards. It allows players to play in teams, and it allows them to make up words that don't exist, which, of course, is the literal exact opposite of what Scrabble is. You have a certain number of tiles, and you have to make words with that are real words with your tiles. And if they're not words that are real, you know, you challenge them in the dictionary, and you don't get the points. I mean, that's literally what it is. It's let's expand our vocabulary. Let's become as you know, fluent with our language as we can, and in a fun and competitive way. Well, according to the people at Mattel, they didn't like the idea, or I'm sorry, rephrase. Young Gen Z players don't like the idea of being competitive. They just want to, like, you know, have fun. And winning, I mean, what's that? I mean, participation ribbons for everybody, right? And actually, what do you mean dictionaries? What are those? We don't know what dictionaries do. That's so boomer generation. We make up our own words as we go along. No cap. So this is the kind of crap that they're doing because Gen Z, the woke generation, the young, and it's funny, Seth, because I just got done saying I'm shocked to find out that this, at least according to the most recent survey, voters under 30, voting age but under 30, so a lot of that is Gen Z, are voting for Trump. But they are not Trump type of you know, individuals, if you will, when it comes to things like this. They just got used to being pampered in their education, I suppose. They're allowed to become what they want. They're allowed to think what they want. They're allowed to, and treat it as fact, they're allowed to make up words that don't exist and so on and so forth. So scrabble together a bunch of whiny Gen Z babies playing a game that they cannot handle on their own with no stakes because winning and losing doesn't matter to them as long as they get to have fun and make up their own words. It is the end of, I don't know, innocence, if you will. Because games like this are supposed to be the way that they are for everybody and forever. I mean, look, 75 years. That's much, much older than I am. The game hasn't changed in 75 years. But suddenly, here comes a generation that doesn't like hard stuff. And so they change the game. I mean, what's next? What are they going to do to Monopoly? Seth?
Do you love the classic feel of Monopoly, but just can't stand the old white male patriarchy?
Yes, absolutely!
Introducing for Gen Z the newest, cool, hip, fun game like Monopoly, but it's not Monopoly, it's Pluropoly.
What?
In this game, money grows on trees. Don't worry about budgeting, bills, expenses, adulting. Anytime you run out of money, the government gives you more.
No way. Way.
Buy Park Avenue. Rent it out. Make some money. Or don't, because rent control.
Excuse me? A baking powder? $5,000 occupancy permit?
Land on somebody else's property? Don't worry about it. Squatter's rights.
Piece of cake.
No property? That's fine, too. Get a van. Go with the flow.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, did you land on go to jail? That's all right. You'll be let out with no cash bail.
Deny.
In Pluropoly, we add an extra square. Student loan debt forgiveness. You're just rolling in the dough.
Excellent.
Excellent.
Don't like to deal in money? That's fine. Barter with wheatgrass and soybean candles that you made on your own.
Excellent.
Uh-oh, looks like somebody landed on the gender reassignment surgery square.
Excuse me?
Hey, that's okay, because gender's fluid.
She's a babe.
Gen Z Pluropoly. Fun for the whole family. The game only ends when everybody gets enough money to stop climate change. In the game.
Yes!
Wow.
Gender reassignment surgery sold separately.
Can you dig it?
Johnny Hiles doing Johnny Hiles type things. Very well done, young man. Thank you, sir. And it sounds stupid because it is stupid, just in the same way that changing Scrabble is stupid. All right, 216-901-0945. RJ is in Broadview Heights. Hello, RJ. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead. Okay, I'm not hearing RJ. Is RJ there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, gotcha, bud. Go ahead.
I'm here. Got me? Okay.
Yes, sir.
I want to first of all compliment you on the soundbite you had about Trump, not what he said about the migrant that killed that woman from Georgia. Because a lot of news outlets thought that that was something that he's painting all immigrants in this way.
You're talking about the animals comment, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, of course, that's what they did. They take him out of context with everything that he says, right, in order to make him look bad. He literally called, right, Lakin Riley's murderer an illegal alien animal, and they said, oh, he's calling illegal aliens animals. No, he's not. He's calling, right, those who kill animals. And guess what? You don't have to be illegal to be an animal, because anybody who kills somebody, particularly in the gruesome, barbaric way that they did, that individual did to Lakin Riley, that is animalistic, and I don't care where you're from.
Right. Your soundbite helped me understand that, though, and because I try to listen to a lot of stuff on the news and out of political news and also on on YouTube and wherever else I can find it. I did not find anything that specifically gave a lengthy enough soundbite to explain to show that he was really referring to individuals who brutally kill people who shouldn't be in this country, that they are animals. And that's all.
Isn't that a real shame, RJ? Isn't that a real shame that you had to hunt for it, or I played it because you can't find it anywhere else? It should be instantaneous. When they play games like that and those ridiculous, out of context edits that they do, it ought to be anybody with an interest in true news objectivity would be saying, whoa, 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 here's the whole thing. It's kind of like the both sides hoax, right? When he said that there are fine people on both sides, he didn't say there are fine people who are neo-Nazis. Right. Bingo. Bingo.
Right. Right. Well, I handle news how I try to not evaluate somebody else's editorial, and I try to see for myself what people are saying, what they're doing, and I try to make an evaluation that way. When I don't get the full picture, it's hard to do that. So I was very grateful that I was able to hear what your soundbite said, so I can decide for myself. No, he's not being critical of all immigrants. He's only being critical of these individuals who, and there's a lot of them, who are doing very horrible things.
Yeah. No, you're 100% right, and I appreciate your gratitude for hearing it here, and I'll play it again here in a moment when you and I are done, so people know exactly what we're talking about. But I'm glad that you are we're even looking for it. You're unique in this situation, RJ, because so many news consumers in the general public will listen to something and believe, well, that must be what was said. This is what was done. Look, it's on the news. And when the news doesn't give you the full context, most people just go away thinking that's the way it went down. You at least said, whoa, maybe this isn't the whole thing here. So you sought it out, couldn't find it anywhere, but heard it on this show. The fact that you looked for it makes you unique, and we all ought to do that.
Yeah. There was a difference of opinion there were some other conservative shows who said no, he didn't really say this, but I didn't really hear what they were any sound bites that made it clear to me. Yours was the only one that made it clear to me that he was only talking about specific types of individuals and not all migrants, not all immigrants. And that's an important distinction that certain types of people don't want you to hear. By the way, I do want to call about the border bill.
Okay, what do you got on that?
There are a lot of political talk show, and I'm calling yours a political talk show, who I have heard, and by the way, I live in Cincinnati, even though I'm visiting here in Cleveland. That's why I'm in Broadview Heights. But anyway, there's a lot of political talk shows who have apparently picked up on the idea that the border bill that they didn't pass was a mistake, that they should have passed it. I'm not one of those that has that opinion, but I'm just wondering, are you noticing that much from other individuals who appear to be conservative who are saying that they should have passed this bill?
No, not actual conservatives. I'm not. The only people I hear who are Republicans who say such things are like the McConnell Republicans, the rhinos who actually supported that on the Senate side. But no, anybody who actually paid attention to the language that was in the bill, Republican or otherwise, conservative or otherwise, know that that was an absolute I'm struggling with my vocabulary today. I don't want to say it was a false flag, but it was absolutely not what it was portrayed to be. The reality is, even Biden admitted this in his interview the other day with Univision, And he said, you know, if they would have passed this thing, then I would have been able to shut down the border with congressional approval after 5,000 per day started coming across. As if we're cool with it if it's 5,000 a day. Just when it gets to 5,001, then I could have, and that's important to note here too, RJ, I could have shut it down. It's still presidential discretion at that time, or executive discretion, which doesn't mean he would have. It just means he could have. And if you do allow for the 5,000 a day, as you know, that's 1.85 million people per year crossing. So that bill was an absolute disaster and a disgrace from the very start. And nobody who's a conservative is lamenting the fact that they didn't take it up and vote on it.
Right. And I try to read that bill. I mean, I exposed myself to looking at it. Okay. I looked at it and I didn't find, and honestly, it's not easy to read. It's a huge document, but I found more stuff. It looked like to me there was more stuff to do with spending money, but and maybe getting more agents, but not really stopping the crossing of illegal immigrants.
Yeah, well, you know, the crossing of illegal immigrants is. It's something that they don't even see it as, because they don't want to. They see it again as the United States opening its doors to people who are seeking asylum from persecution in their own in their own home countries. But the real truth here, and RJ, I got to let you go here so I can get some other people on the radio, and thank you for the call. The real truth here, in fact, I'll try to connect maybe three things that we just talked about. Let's go back to the migrant or to the illegal alien who killed Lincoln Riley and what Trump said. The headline from the left was Trump calls illegal aliens, and in fact they don't call them illegal aliens, they call them, you know, undocumented workers or asylum seekers, calls them animals, because he did call one of them an animal. And here's the context.
The Democrats say, please don't call them animals, they're humans. I said, no, they're not humans, they're animals. And Nancy Pelosi told me that. She said, please don't use the word animal, sir, when you're talking about these people. I said, I'll use the word animal because that's what they are. This is country changing, it's country threatening, and it's country wrecking. They have wrecked our country. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. Under the Trump administration, we had a tough policy of getting the bad people out. We wanted to get them out. We took them out by the thousands, and we took, as an example, the MS-13 gangs out.
Okay. And unfortunately, that clip didn't contain the context I had thought that it did. I'll probably have to find that during the break here, where he actually says specifically Lincoln Riley's killer is an animal. And that was the part. Let me see. Does this one have it? Yeah, this might be the one that I had played the other day that the caller was just referencing. Let me see if I can make this work here.
Well, okay. Critics ripping them for selective editing. You know why? Because it didn't happen the way that the Dems say it did. Here's a clip that Team Biden posted from Trump's speech in Michigan this week. Now watch.
Democrats say, please don't call them animals. They're humans. I said, no, they're not humans. They're not humans. They're animals.
First of all, how in the world did they edit all those words together to even put something like what they had? That's amazing. I started in editing as a journalist. I'm pretty good at it.
And here's the reality.
The 22-year-old nursing student in Georgia who was barbarically murdered by an illegal alien animal. The Democrats said, please don't call them animals. They're humans. I said, no, they're not humans. They're not humans. They're animals. And Nancy Pelosi told me that. She said, please don't use the word animal, sir, when you're talking about these people. I said, I'll use the word animal because that's what they are. I'll never forget my vow to her.
Okay. So clearly he was talking about Lincoln Riley's killer and people who do that. Okay? Not all illegal aliens, not all people who come here are killers and murderers. Now I'm going to tie that to I could go to the very fine hoax or very fine people hoax, but instead I'm going to go to Donald Trump's original sin when he burst onto the public political scene, when he came down the golden elevator in the summer of 2015 and said he was running for president and said one of the first things he's going to do is build a big, beautiful wall. And what he said at that time was, because Mexico is allowing all of their people, they're sending all of their people up here to the United States, and they're not sending us their best. They're sending us murderers and rapists and killers and so forth. You know, violent people. And so what did the media immediately do? Trump says all Mexican migrants are killers and rapists and murderers and whatnot. And it is not what he said. He said they're sending us their worst. And it's not as if he didn't have context. It's not as if he didn't have history on his side. Does anybody remember the Mariel boat lift? Castro emptied his prisons, literally all of the worst rapists and murderers and thugs and violent people and so on and so forth that he was talking about. And they all, you know, floated over to Miami, for crying out loud. When Castro emptied his prisons and sent a ton of violent people to the United States, that's exactly what Trump is saying Mexico is doing. The cartels, the drug runners, the traffickers, the rapists, these are the people who are flocking across the border. He was right, of course. And now we're starting to see examples of it, especially since the floodgates have been reopened by Biden. Trump closed them, Biden reopened them, and what do we have? Murderers, rapists, violent animal criminals who are coming across this that border from Mexico. Now, the reality is they're not even all Mexican. It's not like, you know, Mexico opened their prisons and sent all of the Mexican criminals up here, similar to what Castro did with Cuba. But they are essentially being allowing their country to be used as a land bridge for those people, for the violent people. And so they take every word that Trump says out of context to make it sound like much worse than what he said. They did it with the animal hoax. They did it with the Mexicans were all rapists and druggies and criminals and so forth. And of course, they did it with the very fine hoax thing. The Democrats are very, very good at making up stories to make their political opponents, particularly Donald Trump, look evil. But the reality is President Trump, the very fine hoax thing, I don't know if I want to play the whole thing right now, but when President Trump was decrying the violence there at Charlottesville and was talking about the people who showed up there to innocently and quietly protest the removal of statues that they thought were very important to American history, those were the very fine people he was talking about, which were completely separate from the neo-Nazis who came there armed with, you know, with whatever they had, ready to do battle with the Antifa, who also came there armed to have a battle over this thing. They were going to defend the taking down of the statues. The neo-Nazis were there to scream and say, don't touch those things. Those were the bad people. Trump criticized them unequivocally, categorically said these are very, very awful people. Called them names. I can't remember exactly what his language was. But he said there were, however, innocent people there who were very fine people on both sides. There were people there who wanted the statues removed who weren't fighters. And there were people there who wanted to save the statues who weren't fighters. They were there just to speak and to protest peacefully. But they made it into Trump defends neo-Nazis, calls them very fine people. I'm going to be honest with you here. I truly believe that President Trump might best be served as he tries to win back the White House. He might best be served being less aggressive and less offensive and just allowing the left to continue to attack him and just be defensive and just be almost let yourself be victimized, because it's working. When they go after Trump with lawfare, with another lawsuit, with the bogus document scandal while letting Biden off the hook, when they go after him for this ridiculous Stormy Daniels hush money thing, when they go after him saying he wasn't allowed to call the Secretary of State in Georgia and say, find me the rest of those votes, which just means do a recount. That can't be right. Get the rest of the votes. He didn't do anything illegal. When they come after him with lawfare, he looks and sounds and is a sympathetic character. And sympathy can go a long way. When they come after him and take him out of context and things like this, he becomes a sympathetic character, provided people know the real context and actually do what I've done here and play this again and again and again and again. Because if he just lets them continue to TDS themselves into screams and fits of rage, TDS being Trump derangement syndrome, if he just lets them TDS themselves into rage, he looks like the steady, calm. He's not steady and calm. Donald Trump is a very, very flamboyantly aggressive personality. But he comes across as being calm and the victim in all of this. Almost gets martyred by what they're doing to him. And it you know what? It's working. I'm struggling to find a way to understand how that poll that I quoted at the beginning of the show this morning could be. that Gen Zers, voters under the age of 30, prefer Trump 58-40 over Biden after all of the indoctrination that they have been given against Trump, against MAGA, against conservative values, against the Constitution, against free speech, against the Second Amendment, against our right. All of the thing, again, traditional families, men and women, the whole nine yards with the trans stuff. How can they survive the indoctrination and still come out here and be supporters of Trump? And I believe it's going to be because they feel badly for Trump. I think many of them are watching what is being done to him and they're saying, that's not right, that's not fair. And I think the sympathy card can go a very, very long way here. So I'm glad the caller brought it up. And I do apologize for taking as much time as I did on it. We'll get to more calls in a bit. We're also going to have a guest on to talk about the ongoing fight in Gaza and what kind of a fight it is prompting here in the United States with respect to American policy there. Who's truly anti-Semitic? Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden for abandoning Israel or Donald Trump for telling Jews not to be stupid and vote for Democrats? We're going to get into that with an expert coming up on Always Right.
That's willyouseeonevet.org.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This is Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, it is 8 minutes after 11 o'clock, which means hour number three has commenced. Our final hour of the show today, our final hour of the day, our final hour of the week, which is a glorious thing. Hopefully you've got a good weekend planned. I'm a little fired up. Before we go to our guest, I'm a little bit fired up about what the last caller just brought up, reminding me about how evil and how duplicitous and deceptive the media is, trying to take Trump's words out of context all of the time, claiming that he called illegal aliens animals. He called murderers who are illegal aliens animals, and I'm sure he would call murderers who are American citizens animals as well, because murder, particularly in the barbaric way that Laken Riley was killed, is an animalistic thing to do. There's just no question about it. But they take him out of context and say, nope, that's not what he said. Remember when Biden... How many different times, not remember when, how many different times has Biden repeated the Charlottesville lie?
It's also the third anniversary of that terrible day in Charlottesville. Remember what it felt like to see those neo-Nazis, close your eyes, and those Klansmen, white supremacists, coming out of fields, carrying lighted torches, faces contorted, bulging, veins, pouring into the streets of historic American city, spewing the same anti-Semitic bile we heard in Hitler's Germany in the 30s. Remember how it felt to see a violent clash ensue between those celebrating hate and those standing against it? It was a wake-up call for all of us as a country. For me, it was a call to action. My father used to say, silence is complicity, not original to him, but he believed it. At that moment, I knew I couldn't stand by and let Donald Trump, a man who went on to say, when asked about what he thought, he said there were very fine people on both sides.
That was Biden completely, fully lying to the American people. In as direct a way as you can possibly imagine, about all of it, called Donald Trump anti-Semitic, saying that Trump said that the vile white supremacists, neo-Nazis, and Klansmen, by the way, the Klansmen were not the same as the neo-Nazis, not at all. There weren't Klansmen there, but there were neo-Nazis there. Klansmen would have been marching on the side with the Antifa folks because they were Democrats too. But he didn't mention at all who they were fighting, who the clash was with. The clash was with armed, weaponized, and battle-fatigued Antifa fighters. They were there with helmets on. They were there with chest protectors on. Not Kevlar, but they were there ready for a battle. He didn't even mention them. He only mentioned the one side. And he certainly didn't mention the fact that those individuals he just said Donald Trump was anti-Semitic for supporting, that Donald Trump condemned them.
And you had people, and I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists, because they should be condemned totally. But you had many people in that group other than neo-Nazis and white nationalists, okay?
Same exact thing they're doing now with the animals comments. Same thing they did with the Mexicans are all rapists and murderers comments. They completely edit the clips, cutting out the rest of what he said. He was speaking very specifically on that day about the people who showed up to peacefully protest the removal of statues because they believe in American history, and they do not believe that rewriting American history with 21st century rules in place, judging people from the 19th century or the 18th century, that they should just be, you know, have their entire legacies and memories removed. They were there to peacefully protest the removal of those statues. And there were some people there who were not Antifa who were there to cheer on the removal of those statues. They were fine people expressing their First Amendment rights to assembly and to be heard. That's what they were there for. They were fine people doing it the right way, peacefully and patriotically expressing their views on this whole thing. The idiots who decided to brawl, the idiots who decided who came there looking for a fight, the neo-Nazis and the Antifa clowns, they should have been condemned, and they were condemned. By whom? By Donald J. Trump. That's whom.
You're changing history, you're changing culture, and you had people, and I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists, because they should be condemned totally, but you had many people in that group other than neo-Nazis and white nationalists, okay? And the press has treated them absolutely unfairly. Now, in the other group also, you had some fine people, but you also had troublemakers, and you see them come with the black outfits and with the helmets and with the baseball bats.
Donald Trump was the only one on that day who told the truth, that there were bad people on both sides looking to fight, and there were good people on both sides looking to just be peaceful and say, yeah, take those things down. We hate them. They're racist. And others saying, no, keep them up. They're American history. And you're misinterpreting, and you're taking away all of the good that these individuals did and saying, well, because they own slaves, they can't have their legacies anymore. Trump was the only one who told the truth. But yet they continue to castigate him. They continue to try to portray him as something that he's not, particularly anti-Semitic, as you just heard Biden say. All right, that brings us to our guest, as I mentioned now. They are trying to declare Donald Trump anti-Semitic for more recent things that he is saying, including that American Jews who vote for Democrats should have their head examined. A couple of weeks ago, he said American Jews who vote for Democrats should be ashamed of themselves. Why? Because Democrats are selling out their Holy Land. They're selling out Israel. Joining us now is Danny Katz. Danny Katz is a language expert, the author of The Language of Betterarchy, a blueprint for uniting against tyranny. Danny, good morning. Good to have you.
Good morning, Bob. Thank you so much for having me. I'm in shock at those clips you just played. Wow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've been after him for a long time. They'll take anything that he says out of context. They will use it to damage him in order to advance their own agenda. And they're doing it right now. I mean, you know, President Trump was the president that actually made good on a couple of decades of presidential promises to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, to move the American embassy to Jerusalem. You know, Obama promised it, Bush promised it, Bush 1 promised it. Nobody ever did it. Trump came in and did it, and somehow, some way, they're painting him as an anti-Semite based on these speeches. What do you say?
Well, I mean, the word anti-Semite is so weaponized. It's so misused thanks to the ADL and their partnership with Tavistock, you know, the propaganda outlet out of the UK. And so, you know, they utilize this term in the most egregious of ways to shut down discourse, just to shut down conversation. So at this point, it means absolutely nothing. It's just a way to get critical thinkers to be afraid to speak because it's a reputation-destroying label.
Yeah, it is. And that, of course, when you're running for president, the most important thing you can do to a person is destroy their reputation and make them, you know, make them sound like something that they are not. But, I mean, is it out of bounds for him to say, look, if you listen to the policies being promoted by Biden, by his Secretary of State, by, you know, Democratic Senate Majority Leader, you know, Chuck Schumer, all saying we're going to change our policy. We cannot support Israel going any further into Gaza to defend themselves because of the collateral damage. If President Trump says, you know, your families, it's your people who are over there who were attacked on October 7th. If you vote for the people who are abandoning them, you really ought to have your head examined. Is that really criticizing them and their IQs and their, you know, particularly their Judaism? Or is he saying, why don't you look out for yourselves here? Look out for your fellow Jews. They're the ones who are you know, in harm's way here.
This has nothing to do with Jewishness or Judaism. This just has to do with sanity. As a Jewish woman, I find it completely offensive how any critique of American policy with Israel has become conflated with anti-Semitism. It's a complete misuse of the word. And it's like playing on this identity politics, which is really all the left has been leaning on for the past, you know, at least a decade. So it's them playing their dirty tricks and just like getting into the psychology of people of like, oh, I don't want to be accused of being hateful, or I don't want to be accused of being a bigot. Right. And so we have all this like weird virtue signaling around people, you know, defending themselves. The whole thing is so gross. It has absolutely nothing to do with Jewish people, with Judaism. It's politics straight up. I've been criticizing, you know, the United States relationship with Israel for over a decade. You know, when people in the Katrina hurricane weren't allowed to get grant money if they had been vocally critical of Israel. How does that work in a constitutional republic? So, you know, we would be wise to look at how the phrase anti-Semitism, that whole paradigm, has been used to prop up tyranny and, you know, a really questionable relationship with Israel for a very long time.
Well, I want to try to understand exactly what you're saying. We're talking with Dani Katz. She is the author of The Language of Betterarchy, A Blueprint for Uniting Against Tyranny. Are you suggesting that it is it anti-Semitic to criticize Israel at all?
No.
Can it ever be?
No. No. Israel is a state. It's not a people. You know,
yeah, but it is a Jewish state, and it was established particularly in 1948 as a Jewish state for a reason. And of course, the fact that it is historically for 3,000 years been the holy land of the Jewish people, and it is being, they particularly are being persecuted by so many of their Arab neighbors because of their presence in that land. They're not just, they wouldn't be angry if, you know, a bunch of Slovenians lived in Israel. It's the fact that Jews live in Israel that they are complaining about. So how is that not anti-Semitism?
Well, first of all, I haven't been to Israel. I'm not there on the ground, right? So I don't know what that's like. But in my mind, that was set up as a smokescreen to protect Israel politically from doing whatever it is they want to do by conflating criticism of their political actions with hatred or bigotry towards a race of people or a religion. That whole conversation has gotten so muddied. So I don't think criticizing a nation for the military action they're taking, for the way, you know, the apartheid state in terms of the different rights that different people
have.
Wait
a minute. Wait. Hold on. Are you saying that Israel is an apartheid state?
Like I said, I'm not there.
No, answer that question. Don't like I said me. Did you just say that Israel is an apartheid state?
Wait. Bob, I will answer this the way way that I choose to answer this. Thank you for
respecting. Well, no, ma'am, I apologize, but listen, I'm the interviewer, and I'm asking a direct question that needs an answer
right
before the conversation can continue. Did you just call Israel an apartheid state?
Right, and Bob, what I'm saying is, as a fellow human being and a guest on your show, I'm going to invite you to respect that I'm going to speak and answer the question the way that I choose to speak and answer the question. As I understand,
no, that isn't how it works. I'm sorry. No, that is not how interviews are conducted. When I'm being interviewed and somebody asks me a question, I answer the question that is asked. And if I then am allowed to provide context afterward, that is a great thing. And that's what I would expect. And I will give you the opportunity to do the same. But you can't ignore the question and answer it in the way you want to, which is to avoid and to deflect the question. The question I asked you is Israel an apartheid state?
That's a lot of projection around my
No, it's not projection. It is reception. I received your words. They came through your phone into my ears. That's not projecting. That's receiving. I received your words moments ago when you suggested that Israel is an apartheid state. You condemned Israel's, it sounded like their military actions as well as a state, and saying it's not anti-Semitic to criticize that. Let me change the question for you then. Are you suggesting that Israel should not defend itself against those who committed the terror attacks of October 7th?
No.
You're not. That's good. Well, good. See, now we're getting somewhere. You answered a question that was directly asked of you. That's great. And for a language expert, I'm sure you should respect that as well. Now let's go to the other one. Did you and are you calling Israel an apartheid state?
Yes.
You are. How do you... Now please give me the context of that. Please defend. Tell me how Israel is an apartheid state.
So I'm not going to defend anything because I'm not arguing with you, but I'm happy to respond. And as I said, I'm not there on the ground. And as I understand it from my research, that Palestinians in Israel have different rights than Jews in Israel.
And tell me what research that you are relying upon to make such a statement.
You know what? My realm of expertise is language, propaganda, how language programs reality. I'm not really interested in getting in some sort of contentious fight. I don't know you. I don't have a dog in this fight. I'm an American.
It sounds like you do.
There.
It sounds like you do. You are criticizing America's support of Israel as a state. You said that earlier. Now you've called Israel an apartheid state. Now you're going to go that, well, I'm not a ground, so I can't on the ground there. I'm not on the ground there either. But I can read and I can listen and I can interview Israeli diplomats and I can interview and listen to. I haven't actually interviewed any of the quote unquote pro-Palestinian people there who are critical of Israel. But I can tell you this, Danny, what you are saying right now sounds like a Palestinian. You are condemning Israel's right to defend itself. You're calling it an apartheid state. You are claiming that Palestinians are being mistreated by Israeli leadership. So you sound like you are ready for a discussion of the political ramifications here and not just language.
So what I'd like to point out is the ad hominem attack and the tendency when we get emotionally ruffled by these, you know, highly weaponized, polarizing issues to attack, right? So instead of talking about my perspectives, my ideas, as a Jewish woman, you just called me a Palestinian. So this is like the example of the issues that we're having in the larger political discourse, where instead of being able to discuss ideas, we sink to insulting one another from an emotionally polarized state, and that is
calling,
what I'm
calling you a pro-Palestinian is not an insult if you are indeed supportive of the Palestinian effort here.
I'm just trying to have a conversation around language, but it feels like you have a lot of emotional investment in this conversation.
The interview was supposed to be about how Donald Trump has been accused of anti-Semitism for criticizing Jewish Americans for voting for Democrats. You brought up America's support for Israel. You brought up the Israeli state's decision and the political leaders' decisions to do certain things, and criticizing that should not be called anti-Semitism. You changed the conversation from American Jews voting for Democrats and how Donald Trump's words are being called anti-Semitic. You've changed the discussion, Danny. All I did was follow you down the road you led me on. And the conversation is now America's policies as it pertains to the Middle East and their support of Israel. Are you suggesting that America should withdraw its support for Israel?
What suggesting as an expert in languaging and in propaganda, and I'd love to utilize this conversation as an example for your audience so we can all learn together. These you statements where we're accusing other people, where we're projecting allegiances or labels onto other people are what allow regular sane conversations to erupt into emotionally disruptive, conflict-riddled arguments. So I just love to use this as an example for your audience of ways that are not really useful in collaborative conversation. So I would invite you to, you know, ease up on the you statements, on the accusations, on the projecting labels.
For a language expert, you don't seem to be very good at it. I did not accuse you. I asked you. There is a difference. Let me give you an example. Danny, you are opposed to America's support for Israel. That's an accusation. Danny, are you saying you're opposed to America's support for Israel? Is a question. You don't need to be a language expert to understand the difference between those two things.
And what I'm saying, and I'm going to invite you once again, if we could just slow down on the insults. I'm not feeling very...
What was insulting? What was insulting about that question? Danny,
are you
criticizing America's support for Israel? Yes or no?
I'm going to invite you, Bob, if you could just, like, honor me as a guest on your show, and if we could actually discuss the issues without these projections, I think it would go a lot better. You accuse me of being a Palestinian... Period.
Pro-Palestinian. Pro-Palestinian.
Well, that was what you said. I'm not pro and I'm not anti because I don't define myself by these oppositional polarities. I'm an original thinker who simply observes things and makes commentary as they are, but I don't take a stand in terms of an identity construct of being pro or anti.
Let me try to clarify it another way, and let me just ask you this. Do you believe that there should be a ceasefire in the Middle East in this conflict?
I don't have an opinion on that.
You don't have an opinion on that. I mean, you are coming across as an expert on the subject, Danny, but now you're telling me you have no opinion. And again, I'm not even asking for straight, stone cold facts here. As you say, you're not on the ground there. Neither am I. So we can give our opinions. It is perfectly acceptable to do so.
Right.
So
you're saying with 1,200
people, hold on.
Propaganda.
You're saying though that a terror attack on October 7th that resulted in 1,200 torturous deaths of innocent men, women, and children in Israel, which has led to an Israeli invasion into Gaza, which is leading to a lot of collateral damage, deaths there as well, in the United States Congress, and indeed in the United States public square. You're a communications expert. In the United States public square, everyone has an opinion. There are people screaming and chanting on campuses and in cities all over America. Ceasefire now. They are pro-Palestinian. Then there are others who are saying, no, Israel has the right to defend itself. They are pro-Israel. Everyone has an opinion. You're telling me that you have no opinion on the matter.
Correct.
All right. Well, interesting. It's an interesting position, but I respect the fact that you have no opinion on the matter. I will say, however, that your critical condemnation of Israel as an apartheid state and then your refusal to explain how you came to that conclusion, as well as your statement that America's policies of defending Israel are worthy of criticism, I think that is an interesting thing as well. Maybe the next time you talk with somebody about this, you will be willing to, because you don't want to do it to me, maybe you can explain how you came to those conclusions. Would that be fair?
I'm gonna choose not to answer that. Thank you so much for having
well,
on
thank,
my
well,
show.
Thank you for staying on brand. Yeah. Thank you for staying on brand then and refusing to answer the hard questions. I appreciate your time.
Mm-hmm.
All right, it's 11:30.
So
it's 11:30. We're gonna take a time out here. We're gonna kind of decompress after that. The pitch for the little inside baseball for you here, inside radio. The pitch from the publicist was Danny Katz, author of The Language of Betterarchy, A Blueprint for Uniting Against Tyranny, will speak on Trump saying that any Jewish person who votes for Democrats or President Biden should have their head examined as an allegation of anti-Semitism. That's what we were supposed to talk about. She quickly went into condemning Israel and condemning those who support Israel instead. which is interesting because, as she pointed out, she's a Jewish woman. I don't know her. But it sounds like a classic case of a self-hating Jew, if I have ever heard one. And I know many of them. I'll be back.
The Answer.
All right, well, that's the way it goes sometimes. Like I said, the interview was supposed to be about the left calling Trump anti-Semitic because he dared to criticize American Jews for voting Democrat. And instead, what I get is a Jewish guest who apparently is one of what I think Mark Levin, among others, calls a self-hating Jew or a self-loathing Jew, who is more loyal to the party than she is to her own race and religion. She doesn't give a rip about Israel. She doesn't give a rip about Israeli Jews. She cares only about her agenda, and she did not like the agenda that I was advancing here, which was in defense of Israeli Jews. So the subject changed dramatically. She called Israel an apartheid state. She said America's policy toward Israel she didn't like. She said criticizing and condemning Israel's political decisions and leadership is different than criticizing them for their Judaism. I'll tell you what, she was all over the place. I did not expect that. But that's what it gets. Sometimes that's what you get. Steve in Collinwood. Hello, Steve. Go ahead.
Ha, Bob, welcome to Jewish Voice for Peace. That's who you were talking to.
These are ceasefire now people. She didn't want to admit that, obviously.
Yeah, it's leftist organizations that it's Jewish Voice for Peace. There's a whole list of them that are enlisted. But it just goes to prove Trump's point, because she's a Jewish woman. Right now, other Jewish women, because they're Jewish, are sitting in dark tunnels, and they're being held as harlots and sex slaves. And to be able to say, well, I have no opinion on that. That just goes to prove that, you know, you need a checkup from the neck up.
Yeah, well, you know what she is. You know what she was? She did the same thing that Rashida Tlaib did. Rashida Tlaib was asked by the Fox reporter, why won't you condemn or will you condemn death to America chants here on American soil? And she said, I'm not talking to Fox. She couldn't say. Yeah, what she basically said was, I have no opinion on that, because she didn't want to say her real opinion, which was, of course, I don't disagree with it. I agree with death to America. She's not proud of being here. She is proud and supportive of Palestinian and her faith and nothing else.
They go through seminar training for that. It's all funded. Some of the Soros funding. I just wanted to say, on apartheid in Israel, I had a commander who was an Arab and a Muslim. And the guy, do you remember the TV show with Fess Parker, Daniel Boone?
Yeah, of course.
He was a dead ringer for that. He was a big guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I trusted him with my life. And he told me, one time sheepishly asked him, I said, do you think, you know, there'll be peace between them? He said to me, there'll always be an Arab that for $50 we'll put a bomb in front of a toy store, because that was an incident that had just happened.
Yeah.
So I'll just say, if you know, you know.
There you go. Well, I'm glad. Thank you, Steve. I appreciate the phone call. Appreciate that very much. I find it extraordinarily insulting, by the way, that she, she declared Israel to be an apartheid state. I mean, that's like I said, that is also Sharia Tlaib language. That is also Ilhan Omar language. That is AOC language, the Hamas squad. That's what they say. They wear their tablecloths around their necks and they scream Israel is an apartheid nation as if somehow, quote unquote Palestinians or Arab Muslims, you know, in Israel are treated differently as some sort of a second class and denied rights that Israeli Jews have. It is simply not true. And again, I have talked to enough people who have lived in Israel, and certainly many of those who have visited there many, many times. I should get Mike Goldstein back on the air. Who can attest to this? The idea that Israel is an apartheid state is simply laughable. That is truly anti-Semitic. And if you are a Jew making such an anti-Semitic statement, then you know what? Let that be your burden. Let's go to Phil in University Heights. Phil, go ahead.
Good morning, Bob. Excuse me. First of all, you handled that. I can't. It's just terrific. You got right to the point. You got the heart of it. It's really sad to call, first of all, with your original argument, their discussion about Trump, to call him an anti-Semite is just totally bizarre.
It's laughable.
Anyone who knows.
And how about the fact, by the way, that she had never heard those Charlottesville comments? I mean, I don't know how you pass yourself off to be an expert on anything if you were completely oblivious to one of the largest stories, honestly, of the last several years. That massive horrific battle, that happened there in Charlottesville, and all of the accusations that have been made since then. The idea you'd have to be living with your head in the sand to not know that. But anyway, go ahead.
She was an expert at obfuscation.
Yes. Yes, well said.
and not anything else that I could see. But the fact that these ridiculous statements are coming out about anti-Semitism is really, it's been bothering me a lot, because it's offensive to me. As I think I've said before, I'm an Orthodox Jew, and I've been all over the country and in Christian communities, and I've seen nothing more than mutual respect for ethics and religiosity and understanding of the world and God's place in the world, and the way this whole thing has been going, it's not coming from the Jewish community. This is coming from the leftists, and there's a purpose to it. If you can drum up anti-Semitism, and you can rally people to fight amongst in the religious community, Christians and Jews and even Islamists who are really God based, to get them all fighting is a win for them. It's a win, yeah, because the Marxists can take away the ethics and the dependence on God and the relevance of godly intervention and the ethics from Sinai, the Ten Commandments, which is in all of these religions.
Phil, that's very, very, and thank you for the call, my friend. That's very.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.